Live episode of the Butterfly Evolution Show. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. I want to first share with you that Tika is in with me tonight. She is in town and is going to sit in tonight and just get back involved. So I just wanted to get that out first. Tika, say hi.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, well, we're going to move along because I'm so excited. This is a continuation of last week's show. You know that we are talking about what's really going on. And last week we had a wonderful, wonderful show on prayer and faith. And I hope that you all took the time to go back to listen to the show or at least took some things down and reflected upon them this past week. Hopefully you certainly did decide to pray. Before getting started, or pray more. Before getting started, I do want to remind you that the chat line is open, so we can see anything that you want to comment on or have a question about. So go ahead and do that whenever you feel the need to do so. And again, you don't have to do it at the beginning of the show. You can do it at any time during the show. Phone listeners, let me just back up for a minute. Those of you who are listening by way of chat, please remember that you do have to be a registered follower of the show in order to submit your question or a comment. So if you're listening online and you have not registered as a follower for tonight, maybe you just want to use the call-in number. You can still listen online, but if you do decide to make a comment or have a question, why don't you just use the call-in number, which is the 818-691-7406. Again, 818-691-7406. For those of you who are listening by phone, please remember that you only need to select the number 1 if you do have a question or a comment. So only if you do have a question or comment, and you do not have to do that at the beginning of the show. You know, you may find something that we say during the show that just kind of strikes you to call in and make a view or stress your point. So you don't have to do that at the beginning. You can do that at any time during the show. Moving along, again, tonight's topic is what's really going on. Again, it's a continuation of last week's show. And basically, I'd like to call it a mini-series. And I think we will revisit this again because I think we do need to be reminded of how important prayer is and faith and love and family and so forth. So it we'll call it just a mini-series as we move through it. I found it interesting. It was not originally my intention to make this a series. However, you know, here we are, and I think that we're here because it's so needed. I felt so blessed after the show, and many of you reached out during the week and after the show to kind of talk about how timely it was for you to be reminded of prayer and what prayer does in our lives. So basically, what's going on is really about how we process what we're going through and how we process, how we handle, and how we respond to what we go through. Hopefully, after this, hopefully it will assist you in determining how much of what we go through is basically life happening. You know, how much is it just life happening? And we did a show on life happening as well. Or how much is it something that we are doing or not doing? More importantly, when we're going through it, are we growing through it? So sometimes, you know, we just have to go through things because it is life happening. But there are some things, you know, like we talked about last week, prayer. I believe when prayer is in your life, when God is in your life, even when you're going through, you are growing. So sometimes, you know, we just need to look at it as that we are growing, okay? It does appear to me that many people, many of us, and I'll include myself, many of us are just kind of going through the motion, and I know we all from time to time will feel that way. Things happen in life. We go through things. Things change. But many, many people, Tiki and I were talking about this yesterday, I believe, just how so many people appear to be unhappy these days, angry. And I think they're just going through the motion, or we're just kind of going through the motion and accepting life as it is, and we're not experiencing God or the life that God intended for us. So in saying that, in preparing for this show and starting the show, there are several core reasons that I felt necessary or to talk about, or it could be the potential cause of what I call to be a major breakdown in society. And the significant increase of some things that I mentioned last week, and I want to go over those again, but there seems to be a significant increase in sickness, depression, divorce, and a separation. We've talked about divorce on the show, and I believe we've talked about depression as well. But, of course, divorce and separation, it affects the family, and family was one of the things that we were going to talk about tonight as well. There's so much to say on love. We may not get to the family part, but we will talk about it. I think that when you talk about family and speak about family, you know, prayer and faith and love certainly plays right into that. And, again, divorce and separation is on the rise, and that does affect the family and the family structure. I think that that affects the family more than we know, and for a very, very long time, because you have to think about the offsprings and, you know, the children and their children, and it just becomes dysfunction raising dysfunction, and no one seems to be to stop and address, you know, the things that they're going through. Another thing is love turning into pure hate, and we're talking about love, of course, tonight. And when I thought about that, you know, I thought about marriage, divorce, family. You know, so many people, how do you agree to love someone for life, or you look to love someone for life, and you just absolutely end up hating, despising that person. In some cases, it's the parent to your children and so forth. So we're going to talk about, that's one of the reasons that we selected as well. Resentment towards one another is another one. Lack of self love, and that's a very, very important one. Lack of self-love, as we talk about love tonight. Low self-esteem, shame, guilt, and fear. That's another thing that seems to be on the rise. Severe judgment and such an addiction to drama. It seems that we are looking for everything to keep us from dealing with us or what's going on in our life. You know, we're looking at the TV and working more. Just such drama seems to be going on in our lives today or around us. Suicide, certainly cannot say enough about that. Suicide is certainly on the rise, and we're finding that it's more now in our young people. You find more young people taking their lives. That means something is wrong. Something is going on that certainly should not be. Poverty, you know, everybody is aware of what's going on there. And then, again, many people are just truly unhappy. And it appears that the people that are unhappy, they just want everybody to be unhappy as well. They're unhappy, and so now the whole world has to be unhappy. And to take that further, they're not to blame, or no one wants to take responsibility for their unhappiness or where they are in life, okay? So keep those things in mind as we go through this series, and you may have some other things to add, because, you know, it may be something else going on in or around your world, but those are just some of the things that I pulled out and just thought they were, you know, significant enough to discuss, because they are on the rise. And I just want to say, you know, as you think about those, and especially talking about blame, you know, there may be some things that have happened in life that you have no control over, your upbringing, you know, how you were brought up, the type of life you were brought up in. But no one, you can't do anything about that, but no one, about your mind, you can. You can control your thoughts. You can control what you choose to deal with, how you choose to deal with it. And as I thought about that, I thought about the series that we did on the making of a slave and Frederick Douglass. Again, if you all remember, if he can come out of slavery with such positiveness and such accomplishments, we can move through our stuff. And basically, Frederick Douglass said that no matter what, to me, his own words, no matter what, I will not allow you to enslave my mind. So no matter what has happened in your childhood, no matter the lack of love you received, or where you are now, your mind does not have to be enslaved, and you do not have to remain there where you are. So keep those things in mind. And I just want to ask, I failed to mention this, but as I did last week, just for you all that's listening, get a piece of paper and a pen out, because as we go through, we have a lot of verses that we want to give out, and just a number of things that you should write down, particularly if you're going to, you know, make an effort to move forward and grow beyond where you are now, particularly if you're going to add prayer to your life and faith. Have some scriptures that you'll want to write down as we go through it. Do you have anything? And for those of you who are just coming in, I just want to remind you all, as I said earlier, Tika is here tonight and is going to be doing the show tonight. So you'll hear her come in and out as well to share. So she is here visiting and right here in, I won't call it the studio, but right here with me. So you have anything? Okay, well, moving on again. This series is talking about several things, and speaking of those things that are on the rise, sickness, depression, divorce, and all those, we talked about prayer and faith, and again, last week, how does prayer and faith, or the lack of prayer and or faith in your life, do you think, basically what I wanted to get over last week was, do you think some of these things are going on because the lack of prayer and faith in our lives? This week we're going to talk about love for sure. I don't know if we'll be able to get through the entire part of family. We may be able to touch on it some, but not sure if we'll get through all of it, but we will pick it up next week if not. The third phase of it is relationship and fear. That's the last phase of it, and we may have to add family into that one. Again, I'm hopeful for those of you who listened last week that you did do more praying this week, because it is life-changing. I know I had gotten busy with life and just was not doing as much prayer as I had been. I told you all about the 4 a.m. prayer that we started and just allowed that to mingle away for different reasons. But I told you about that, and I also shared with you there was a time where I was doing 6 a.m. prayer and did it for quite a while, and it was life-changing. So prayer does work. Prayer does work. I recently heard a quote, a day hemmed with prayer is much less likely to unravel. And that's an author unknown, but it was so profound. And I actually just heard that on Saturday. A day hemmed with prayer is much less likely to unravel. And I can tell you, it does just make the day different. So try it. If you're not a prayer person, if you don't get up, you know, in the morning and begin your day with prayer, I challenge you just for tomorrow. If you just feel the need to do it, just try it for tomorrow. I tell you, it's different. It changes your day. It makes it bigger, brighter. You have more time in your day. It just seems like God is guiding you through that day. So wake up. And it doesn't have to be. Some people, you know, they don't pray because they feel like they don't really know how. It's basically talking to God. Just express God. Invite God in your world, in his world for today. So try that tomorrow. I'm briefly going to speak on prayer and faith before going into the love part of it, because without prayer and without faith, there really is no love. So I want to take some time to revisit prayer. I hope that you all did go back and listen to My House Shall Be Called a House of Prayer by Jim Zambala. I shared that with you. I had an opportunity to listen to the video at church several weeks ago, but I was so blessed by it. I came home and I found it on YouTube, and I've watched it several times since then. For those of you who did not watch it, I want to share just one part of it, and I may not have all of it right, but I want to quickly share just one part of it with you. So, and I'm hoping that that will challenge you to go out and watch it, listen to it. But this pastor explains, and I'm going to do this real brief, this pastor explains his daughter being lost. You know, they're in New York City, I believe it was, or New York. And, you know, a lot of things go on in New York, and he basically explains that he lost his daughter, you know, to drugs and so forth. Just that life, so to speak. It came to a point where he had to tell his wife no more, that she cannot come back here, you know. And as a pastor, you are expected to be in control of your household and your children and so forth. And he said it just got to a point of discouragement even for him to get up and prepare his sermons and preach and so forth. So he basically told his wife that no more, you know, she cannot come back here until she gets her life together. Of course, no mother wants to hear this, and we're going to, and fathers too, but, you know, we are built differently. So as a mother, of course, this did not sit right with her, but being in order, she did abide. He was preaching one night, several months later, I believe, and received a note that someone in the audience, she had given it to one of the ushers to bring it up to him, and this lady in this letter explained that she felt the need to pray for his daughter. And so he allowed them to do so. He did explain that he reluctantly thought, is this you, God? Nevertheless, he did allow them to pray for her. Well, several days later in that same week, this young girl, he goes on to explain that the prayer service became as if there were women in labor. He said he knew when he left that if there was a God, that this situation with his daughter was over. So he explained the prayer as being just, you would think that it was women, you know, wailing, they were in labor. That's just how much they prayed and how hard they prayed. And he knew at that time that, he said to himself, if there's a God, this is over. He went home, and later that week, his wife came up and said that your daughter is downstairs. He went downstairs and explained that his daughter was in the floor in tears, and she said to him, it's done. Basically, I want to come home. It's done. And she went on to ask him if he was praying for her on this particular night, which was the night that they were actually playing at church. She explained to him that God had showed her that they were praying for her life changed that night, and she knew that it was over as well. So God confirmed to him through prayer, but do keep in mind and do realize that he had to make a decision, and as a pastor, I would think that is a difficult thing to do, to say to your daughter, no more, but then to pray and believe in prayer, because, again, when he left, he said, if there's a God, this is over. So as he tells this story, his daughter that this happened to is sitting out in the audience. She's a godly woman. She's married. She's raising godly children. So prayer does work. And I think the reason that I have this later to share with, I was going to share this with you later, but the reason that last week's show was so peculiar for me was because I felt like I was a listener. I really, there are probably parts that I, even now, I don't think I really remember. They weren't in my notes, basically. So I felt like God was truly speaking last week. And I think what he's telling us is pray more. Pray all the time. Pray more. And pray in the right heart, you know. So I wasn't going to share that story, but I felt the need to because I'm not sure many of you went back to listen to that sermon. But again, it is called My House Shall Be Called a House of Prayer, and it's by Jim Zambala. Zambala is Cymbala, and you can find it on YouTube.com. If you have any trouble finding it, please let me know. But please take the time to go back and listen. You know, we look at for you basketball fans, we look at basketball, we look at football, we look for women, the housewives, the young and the restless, whatever it is. If you could take the time to look at the drama, and I'm not calling basketball or sports drama, but some of it is. Some of it is, and if you can make time for that, you know, we should be making time for prayer. We should be making time for those things that will help us grow. So, anything? Okay, well, going to keep moving. Just can't say enough to go back and look at that sermon. And again, my house should be called a house of prayer. We're going to talk a little bit also about faith. That was also part of last week's discussion, and basically I want to just point out a few things that we talked about last week about prayer. Hebrews 11:6, but without faith it is impossible to please him, to please God. For he who comes to God must believe that he is and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And I'm putting emphasis on diligently seek him, okay? So keep that in mind as you are praying. Where's your faith? Jesus said that the prayer of faith can move mountains. Okay? James wrote that we can make the sick person well. So he said we can make the sick person well. So if we're not praying for the sick, or we're not praying in faith, or we're not diligently seeking God, but something is wrong. Sickness is on the list. And the word tells us that we can make the sick person well. How many times have you prayed expecting your prayer to be answered? That's a profound question for me, because there have been times I've prayed for something, and when it manifested, I was just as surprised as if I had never prayed. So how many times I think sometimes when we do pray, we're just praying. We're just praying because someone says that is the thing to do. But when we go before God in prayer, we should be fellowshipping with God, conversating, talking. So answer that question for yourself. How many times do you pray, and you pray with expectation? Like, not if, but when. When is this going to happen? I remember praying for a guy, his young girls, out of Virginia, and I would email him and say, okay, is it today? Are they better? Is it today? And he emailed me back, you know, no, not yet. So we are expecting it to happen, but it took me some time to get there. And I do realize that sometimes I expect it to happen more for others than I do myself, which is a problem. So think about that as you, you know, go through, and this is a time for honesty. If you're not going to be honest with anybody else, be honest with yourself, because the one person that you know, you can't hide it from God, and that is really all that matters, because that he is going to be the one that says, well done, my child. So the people that we walk around trying to keep it from or trying to hide it from, you know, it really doesn't matter. And in most cases, what you're trying, if you're hiding something, they're hiding more. So we're really not getting the real people in life. Another thing is praying in faith basically means listening to the right voice, which is the word of God, and not focusing on circumstances. Boy, will circumstances get us deeper in trouble. So powerful. Faith is believing that God can, but also believing that he will. And there is a difference. There is a major difference. Some of us, I think we clearly know that God can. We've seen things happen. But do we believe that he will? Furthermore, do we believe that he will for us in our lives? Because there is truly a difference. Moving along in faith, and whatsoever or whatever we ask, we receive from him, because we keep his commandments and we do those things that are pleasing in his sight. Unanswered prayers are sometimes a result of absence from fellowship with the Lord and his word. Jesus promises that if we remain in his fellowship and allow his word to remain in us, this would produce results in prayers. With that, I say, so are we not praying? Are we not diligently seeking him? Or are we out of fellowship with him? Or are we out of his word? Because the word is telling us that basically whatever we ask, and this is, of course, you know, as we become Christ-like, our hearts become Christ-like. So what we ask for becomes things that God can produce. So with all this going on in the world, that's really where this topic comes from. What's really going on and why? Is it life happening, or is it that we are here because we are not following God's instructions? Jesus told us that we should do even greater works than he. And some people take that as we should be, you know, we should be fellowshipping more, or, you know, some people say that it wasn't that we should be, you know, raising the dead and things like that, be doing more than Jesus. You know, that's up to you how you take that. I'm just going to focus on he's saying that we should do more. Whatever your more is, are you doing it? And that's what I asked myself. Regardless of what that meant, you can take it however you want and however it fits you, but however you're taking it, are you doing more? That means, again, the sick should be healed. The weak should be made strong. Marriages should be put back together. You know, people should not be so hurt, so angry these days, so full of drama and so addicted to drama. I shared last week that a passage where it talks about Satan trembling when the weakest saint prays. You know, why is that? You know, think about that. What if couples, we have divorces on the list, what if couples who were, you know, contemplating divorce, thinking about divorce, what if people who were thinking about suicide, what if they would just for 30 days go before God in prayer? You know, because, again, it says Satan trembles when the weakest saint is on his knees. I'm going to share a little bit more about that as we go through about Satan basically laughing at our tolling and mocking over our wisdom. That's something to think about as well, because, you know, for those of you who don't know, tolling is basically work. So if he laughs at the work we do and or mocks at the work we do and laughs at our tolling, basically he's saying your work means nothing because your heart is not there. You know, sometimes I think we do a lot of work trying to please God in what we do. In our wisdom, we know what God's word says. Many of people can quote the Bible to you, and that's why Satan doesn't feel threatened by what we know, because he's more so looking at what we do, and it doesn't line up. So, again, what's really going on, and why is it going on? Are we out of fellowship with God? So think about that. Tika, you got anything?
Well, actually, I like when you said where you had it there, where you said praying in faith basically means listening to the right voice, the word of God, and not focusing on circumstances. And that right there really stood out when she says focusing on circumstances, because if you can remember, Satan comes to steal, kill, and destroy. So what is his job to do? His job is to come to get you to focus on your circumstances. If and when, and we all do, I'm guilty of it, I have been for a long time, I have revelation over and over and over again of the things that I focus on and what I don't focus on. But when you focus on your circumstances, that is your mountain. When God says that your prayer can move mountains, that mountain is your adversity. That mountain is your circumstances. You can pray those circumstances away. You can speak to those circumstances. You can tell those circumstances to do and to go out of your life. You can remove them. But when you focus on them, that takes your focus off of God. That takes your focus off of having hope that it's going to change. That takes your focus off of believing his word. When you focus on your circumstances, you are not focusing on God. And and his word tells you what to focus on. If we would focus on what his word tells us, and that's Philippians 4 and 8, where he's telling us to think on the things that are true, think on the things that are honest, think on the things that are just, think on the things that are pure, that are lovely, and that are of good report. He says that if you think on these things, you don't have time to even focus on your circumstances if you're doing and thinking on the things that God asks you to think on. But what pulls us away and what gives us anxiety and what causes chaos to just, you know, be an unfolding turmoil on the inside of us is focusing on circumstances. And a lot of times we don't realize that's what we're doing. But that's where stress comes from. That's where headaches come from. That's where ulcers come from. That's where strokes come from. That's where, what else comes from focusing on circumstances? Because that's what stress is. That's what stress and anxiety is, that when you're sweating, when your hands are sweating, when your heart is racing, when your stomach is in knots, that's the most horrible feeling ever. And I don't want it, and I don't want anybody else to experience it. But focusing on circumstances is so unbelievably heavy and life-paralyzing. More than anything, I just want you all to really realize how strong that is, because if Satan can whisper in your ear and tell you to keep your mind on your problems, you will not see a light at the end of the tunnel at all. And moving through, the objective, I expressed this last week, our objective is to bring God's peace, perspective, and his purpose in your life. Prayer, faith, and as we will discuss, love. Think about that, God's peace, perspective, and his purpose in your life. I'm going to briefly talk about that. Peace is basically, I'm talking about the peace that surpasses all, that peace that, you know, when your light bill is due and there are truly no funds, you have that peace. When there is nothing in the bank, but suddenly there is there, or you receive a check. I've been there. I have truly been blessed by God's miracles. I thank God for where I am now, but I so remember those days where, boy, you know, you just have to thank God, and you know that it's God. And we need to remember those times. I remember we were doing the 4 a.m. prayer. We started to ask everyone to look for those miraculous moments in God. And God shows up miraculously every day. We are just so tuned and looking for other things, but God miraculously shows up in our lives in ways that if we look for them, we would see them. So God's peace, perspective, and his purpose, and peace is that peace that surpasses all. His perspective is basically his will, and it's surrendering. You know, have you ever surrendered to God? If so, you probably answered yes to having that peace, because that's what brings that peace. It's saying, okay, God, I'm here. What will you have me do? When will you have me do it? How and where? Basically, I give it all to you. Those days were my best days. And I'm at a different place now. Not that I've gone backwards. It's just that, you know, those were days where there were no distractions. I didn't allow distractions, is what I should say, because there probably was many of them. But that was a time where 6 a.m. prayer was in my life. It was as if nothing else mattered. But what I think more so as I look back now, it was the prayer. Because, again, as we shared earlier, when you wake up and you give God that day, God receives that day. He's just waiting. A lot of times I think God's just waiting on us to say, to invite him into those circumstances, those situations, our day. So try it in the morning. I want to focus a bit on purpose for your life, because as we go to talk about love here in a minute, purpose is very, very important. Peace and perspective is as well, but knowing your purpose, knowing what that means is very important. So what does purpose mean to you? I'm asking these questions. I'm going to ask several questions. I ask you to get a pen and a piece of paper and write these down, because we got to stop just living, getting up, going to work, coming home, cooking, washing dishes, washing clothes, cleaning. You know, we got to start thinking about God and what we're missing, because God has promised us so many things in his word. And the more I research, the more I dig for these topics, I thought I knew, but I tell you, last week's show on prayer and this week on love, I mean, I couldn't get off of love. I have something on family, but I just couldn't get off of love. So as we go through purpose, think about that. I want to share some additional words that describe purpose, that's drive, determination, resolution, persistence,
Again, drive, determination, resolution, and persistence. Again, do you know what your purpose is in life? I want to read Romans 8:28, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. I'm going to read that one more time. Romans 8:28, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And as I asked you about purpose, I want to focus on two things, two key sets of words in that verse: love him and have been. For the first time ever, that have been, who have been called according to his purpose, it stood out to me. When I saw that this weekend, I thought, has it always been there? Who have been called according to his purpose. Of course, love is because, you know, do we really love God? We're talking about love tonight. And before I go back into purpose, let me just say that, you know, do we really know what love is? Do we really, really love God? If so, does our life, does our actions, does it show our love or gratitude for God? So if someone looked at our life, will they know that we love God? Do you feel that for the most part you are called, well, do you feel you are called according to his purpose? Or what does that mean? Because the verse, Romans 8:28, says, who have been called according to his purpose. That stood out to me, and I got on a, actually, I text Tika and I text some more people, like, what do you think this means? What does this mean to be, you know, who have been called? Because to me that said, not everybody is called according to his purpose. That's for the first time. That's the first time I ever read that and got that out of that. So I asked some people, and one person shared with me that basically he believes that everyone has a purpose. Some of them, if they're lucky, and, you know, they will find out what that purpose is before, you know, leaving this earth, before dying. But that there are some people that have purposes that must be fulfilled is what he said. And so I typed down, as you know, what that person said, and went back and started to reflect on it some more. And I thought, wow, so what if those people who have that purpose, who are called according to his purpose, are those the people that he's speaking about? Are those the people that, you know, they have a purpose that has to be fulfilled? But it is so important to know, because I think some people have that dying purpose in them, that, like, that purpose that is just killing them, because either out of fear or circumstances, they won't allow it out. They won't allow it to manifest, although their fear, although they really know that it is their purpose in life. We've had several people on the show talk about, you know, their passion, you know, dancing. You can teach dance. That can be a ministry as well. But religion sometimes holds us back on what, you know, we want to do, that passion, that purpose in life. One of our callers expressed that, you know, she didn't pursue dancing because, you know, she was told that it was not the Christian thing to do. But, you know, again, that and she loves to do it even to this day. But what if God had dozens of young girls that she could have taught dance to, but also because of the way she lives her life now, she could have been ministered to those girls through dance. So, you know, we have to be careful, and that's why knowing who you are, knowing your purpose, knowing God, praying, having faith is so important. In reading God, Chicks, and the Men They Love, and as I talk about being, you know, knowing who you are and so forth, I remembered reading this where they talk about, and this is Holly and Philip Wagner, they talk about 1 + 1 = 2, and we know that. But have you ever thought about when you are selecting someone to love, selecting your life partner, if you are getting one, if you're getting a whole person? And what they were saying in this reading is 1 + 1 = 2, meaning if I'm a one and I go out and select you and you're a half, together we equal one, and one half, not two. And that may sound a little like strange, but in reading it, it just made so much makes so much sense, because we need to be whole when we're going to share our life with someone. Because I think it comes back to divorce. If I'm half and you're whole, even when you need me to be whole that day, I can't be, because I'm needing you to try to fulfill what I'm missing. I'm needing somebody to. So praying and reading the word and learning to love yourself and loving God and trusting God, it allows you to become one whole person, a complete person who's happy with who they are, with their past, with their present, and their future, and not always searching for more, not always looking for what can I get, what now? You know, I have this good job, now I want this. You know, I want a better job. I have a good husband and a good family, but I'm still not happy. I'm still not whole. I'm still not, you know, content. So we're in a world where there is just so much discontent, you know, in everything, in everything. We can have all there is to have and still be miserable. And that is, we said on this show many times, where these famous people, fear. But go ahead.
Well, when you had mentioned about the dreams and the passions and what mm-hmm. some of the things that kind of keeps us from achieving mm-hmm. those dreams and those burning and that yearning that we have on the inside of us. And, of course, we know it's fear. But a lot of times I find that it's a fear because when we see failure, we got to change our perspective. We
yep.
see failure as a setback, and we see failure as leave it alone, don't go back there again.
Mm-hmm.
When if you don't fail, if you fail at this one thing, then you know what not to do again or what not to repeat again, or you know what to eliminate, or you know what to add extra to that situation to get you to where you want to go. So failure is not necessarily meaning that, oh, well, I failed, let me not try. No, you get back up again, you keep doing it.
Right.
KFC, he tried over 900 times to sell that recipe. And if he had stopped at 899,
yes.
we would not know KFC, Kentucky
right.
Fried Chicken,
right.
at all. So the people that have persistently and consistently kept going and persevered, they did not let failure stop them. They took that no, and they heard yes. They had yes in their mind. They visualized yes in their mind, so it didn't matter how many times they heard a no. But when we have our dreams and our passions and when we have these fears, I think another thing that stops us from it is, it is our past failures. But we take and we look at our past and we allow our past to become
exactly.
our blueprint.
Exactly.
Your past is not your blueprint. Your past is meant for you to take it and learn from it, but you're not supposed to take it, study it, and go back to it and then allow it to be the fear to keep you from moving forward
right.
and allow it to keep you in a present fear or a future fear, because your past is not your present, your past is not your future, and what you have failed in the past, that does not necessarily determine what you won't be able to achieve in the future. We allow our past to be our blueprint, and the Bible is our blueprint. And then it was another thing you mentioned about life partners, when you mentioned about 1 + 1 = 2,
mm-hmm.
that right there was huge too, because we sometimes think that I want to go out and I want this whole person. We don't want a broken down person. Of course we don't. Who grows up and says, ooh, I want a broken down man. I want a broken down woman. We don't want a broken down person. But we will go out and seek the best in something without first trying to become whole ourselves. And one thing that the law of attraction says, the law of attraction, that's just one of God's laws. The law of attraction says you attract what you are. So if you want a whole person, a whole healthy person, you have to be that yourself. Otherwise, you will attract what you are. If you're attracting somebody broken, you're broken. If you want someone who's healed, strong, and whole, you got to be healed, strong, and whole. You attract what you are. So you have to be what you want, out there, because two halves of a pie make a whole. Two half human beings don't make a whole. He's broken down, you're broken down, and you're not going to get anywhere with that, but you got to become whole first. And another person cannot make you whole. Your wholeness comes from God and God alone. If you're broken, and we've all been broken, and some of us get broken 2 and 3 and 4 times, but what brings you back to that wholeness is God's love and God's words. But two halves don't make a whole. So when you're looking for a life partner, and when it's a life partner that you see or you admire things in them, A broken woman won't attract a whole man, and a whole woman won't attract a broken man. You won't attract what you're not. You will attract what you are. And if you are attracting whatever it is that you're attracting, one thing you can stop and you can go and look in the mirror and you can ask yourself, God, is that me? God, why do I keep attracting this?
Yes.
Is this
there's usually something in you or something in that person that attracts. Now I can say once you because there are some really good half people, I would say. We're talking for those of you who are just tuning in. If, you know, we were talking about in the book, the name of the book, and I don't know if I gave you that, but it was Godly Chicks and the Men They Love. And in this book, it talks about, you know, selecting 1 + 1 = 2, and that how if you are a number one and you select a half, then you as a couple, you as a group, you equal 1.5, not 2. And it does take 2 whole people to even attempt to make it work. You know, marriage is and love, let's just say love, because we're not talking about marriage, but love is in itself, as soon as the word comes out or the feelings come out, things change. They should change, but not the way that they do, because it should make it so much better. But so that's, for those of you who are just tuning in, that's what we were talking about on the 1 + 1. So as you start to look for people or look for people to love, first make sure that you love yourself. We're going to talk about that. You know what love is. You know what type of love you're looking for. Because a lot of times, I know I do realize now that with knowing me the way that I know me and where I am in life, the past loves that, you know, love that I was attracted to and got involved in, it would be different. I would look for different things. I would choose differently. I would do differently. But they probably would as well. If they have moved forward in their lives and addressed some of their issues and things, then they probably would, you know, they probably would select me either back then. But that's what it's about. This love just, it all begins with you, and we're going to talk more about that as well. Going back to purpose, you know, it is so important to know you and know your purpose when you're trying to be 1 + 1 and equaling 2. Because, you know, so many times you've heard where people will come together and they will, one person will pursue their dreams. One person will be able to do what they want to do. I'm cool with that if you're saying that I'm going first. And then you're going to go. Let's have a plan. Let's put a plan in motion to where, and I do think that it, me personally, I do think that it always should be the man. If someone's going to be able to, now I'm not saying that women just sit back and be housewives. I'm not saying that at all. But if we're doing this the way, you know, God says to do it, and some of you may say, well, he should be already ready if it's the way, you know, that's just kind of a little far fetched, because we have to be willing to help one another grow together. I've seen people where they've connected where one have, you know, one person has a degree, and it could be the woman. But they were willing to work together, to bring finances together, to make a plan, to look, what do we have? That's love, being able to sit and talk. As I thought about this and studied, I kept thinking about couples, married people, people that are going into relationship, because, you know, we are producing kids that we're supposed to be teaching so that they can go out and become whole people. And we're not, because we're not whole.
We're lacking in
strength. So, yeah, we're lacking. We're, you know, and so they're not getting what we're supposed to be getting. That goes back to the list of things that we named and what's really going on with all these things. Going on into the topic, as I mentioned, last week's show has just manifested in my life and made me want to pray that much more, and makes me want to just dig deeper into me. I feel, and I hope, you know, I'm going to get personal here, but for me, I feel that I'm in a transitioning phase in my life. And basically, Tika was here yesterday, and she said the same thing, you know, not even reading my notes or knowing what was in my notes as well. And she said it, and I brought her in here and pulled up my notes and several things that she said that were already in my notes. But transitioning, I'd like to really pull things out and really get you all to think about, what does that mean? What does transition or transitioning mean? And if you feel like you're doing it in your life, why? What does it mean to you? We really need to start thinking things through, thinking about, where are we? Where do we want to be? What do we need to do to get there? And then always include God into it. We try to do so many things without our Creator. So transitioning basically means change, changeover, evolution, which is part of butterfly evolution, it's in our name, conversion, shift, alteration. So again, transition means change, changeover, evolution, conversion, shift, and alteration. For me, I think transition is a good thing, and it's basically, for me, it's growing. I really feel like I am growing. I'm growing inside out. It's basically change. Of course, people don't like change. People will stay where they are out of fear of change for a lifetime. People will say today, and I heard a pastor say this, you know, I want to go to school. I should have gone to school. And 4 years later, they would be saying the same thing. I should have gone to school. And what he said was, well, if you had did it 4 years ago, you would be done now. So stop saying and start doing. Start praying and asking for God's strength, his wisdom, and direction. And if it's for you to do and it's the time, he will make a way. But you got to invite God in your day. So getting back to transition, as I was preparing for the show and thinking about transition and the growing and the pain of it, just to add some humor to the show, I thought about Brandon being a young boy and coming to me on several occasions saying, you know, Mom, I'm really, really hurting. My legs are hurting. I'm really, really hurting. And so, of course, doctor time and going to the doctor. And he was around, I guess, 10 or 11 or so. Well, the basic doctor visit revealed that Mr. Brandon is growing, and it's growing pains. He's just going to have to endure. So it was nothing serious. However, it amazed me as I thought about, and this has been years, but in preparing for the show, I thought about this probably for the first time ever. Who would have known that would be, you know, an example here today? God did. So Brandon, of course, the minute he found out that this pain is the result of me growing, he was absolutely fine with the pain. He wanted the pain, so much so that he would go to bed at night, you know, thinking, oh, I was hurting today. I'm gonna be bigger tomorrow. I'm gonna be stronger tomorrow. And he would come up to us, his dad and I, and say, Mom, am I bigger? Am I taller? Am I stronger? You know, he would go and find a door that, you know, to stand up by and to see if he'd moved. I mean, like overnight. But the moral of the story is that once he realized that this pain was going to create some growth, some change in his life, he was very receiving and accepting to that change. And I thought about my life.
His perspective changed.
His perspective of it all, exactly.
Changed.
You know, and sometimes they say, I've heard that if we just know, we will look at it differently. Well, sometimes we just have to trust. What you have to know is where you are in Christ and who you are. Who you are and know who you are. So just adding a little humor to it and a little light to it, just think of, you know, what if we could say to God, you know, as we've said many times before, we need to be able to grow through what we go through. And that came from Tyree. That was a book that Tyree, I don't know, the Coca-Cola guy is all I can tell you. Tyree, yeah. He wrote a book that I do plan to read. But that's something from his book, just an insert part that I saw. And he says, you know, he was able to grow through what you go through. So if we could think about the things we go through, our pain, our changes, because remember, some of us are called according to his purpose. So we need to just look at, okay, Lord, what I'm going through is for you. And we need to just say sometimes, God, am I growing? Am I becoming more Christ-like? And so forth. So I've said all this hoping that I've gotten you ready for the topic, which is love. I wanted to be able to spend about 30 minutes on that. I have 35 minutes to go, so we're doing pretty good. I'm going to check, before going into love, I'm going to check the lines and check the chat line as well, because we're going to go ahead and get deep into this love thing. And I really, really, for if you're listening, what I'd really like you all to comment on, anything, of course, but I really want some clarity or some additional thought on who have been called according to his purpose. I really would, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to dig in deeper and ask the question to some more, I call them seasoned saints or mature saints. But I really would like you all to comment on that and anything else, but really would like to know your perspective. And then I'm going to check the lines, and we're going to come back, and we're going to get on our topic for tonight, which is love and family, but we may do family next week. Okay. We do have a caller. We have Miss Erlene.
Yes, hi, Tammy.
Hi, yes. How are you?
Hi. Could you just repeat that question, that last question that you wanted us to comment on?
The verse, Romans 8 and 28, for the first time, I don't know why, but that part, who have been called according to his purpose, what does that mean? Does that mean that we, not everyone is called according to his purpose, or that there are some people that, I don't know, just whatever you have to give on that. And you were okay. One of the ones I was going to ask anyway.
Well, several things went through my mind, and one of the things was that sometimes we can't categorize. The only means by which I think we can categorize those that are called according to his purpose are those who are Christians and have that relationship with the Lord. We can't decide whether or not they're the rich guy, the poor guy, or what race that person would be, because sometimes he takes the foolishness of the world to confound the wise. So I think that's the only main criteria, is that the relationship we have with the Lord in terms of if you are called. So if you have that relationship, I just feel that you can say you are called. I just don't think that there is any other way, you know, to say, well, I'm going to be, am I called? Maybe I never. You are called. If you have that relationship with the Lord and you have it in the way that he wants it, then I think you're called. I think that Matthew 16:24 says, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And I think that just simply means to deny oneself means that every moment of your life, self no longer lives. And you're just saying yes to God. And when you say yes to God, with that surrender, you become a part of that plan. And you become a part, I think, of his purpose. It means to, I think, to obliterate yourself as a dominant principle of your life. And you're making God the ruling principle. When you do that, you are the called. And I just don't think there's any other criteria, because that means you're willing. You've said
that makes,
I have surrendered, I'm willing. And I think that's all you need to do. See, I'm willing.
That brings
the
a
rest,
lot
I
of
think,
clarity
from God.
To it, Ms. Lane, because mm-hmm. it makes me look at it a totally different way, and I thank you for it, because what I hear or what I take from that is basically once you become a Christian, once you establish that relationship with God and you are growing and becoming more Christ-like and all of that, that God gives you purpose. So you may not have, you know, God births that purpose, so to speak, if that's a better way to say it, and you are more open or acceptable to it, and you can visualize it more because, of course, the more Christ-like we become childlike. You know, it tells us to become childlike in Christ, and so that's when you start to kind of your rebirth and your reliving brings a totally different twist to it. Totally
and
different.
You remember the phrase kingdom's vision?
Yes.
That's when that begins.
Yes.
That begins the beginning of the kingdom's vision. And
yes.
I think we always feel that we've got to become so prepared. I mean, we've got to do so many different things, difficult things to be able to measure up. And he says, you know, those who are willing, come.
Okay.
If you're willing, if you have a willing heart, come. The rest of it, God doesn't send you to do any of his purposes without equipping you to do it. That's not your job. That's not our job to do. Our job is to surrender and
right.
to say, I'm willing. That's our job. I mean, he asks, once you do that, the rest of it, I think, is the guiding, the king's vision will appear. That's just the way I see that. Thank you, Tammy.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The lines are open for if anybody else has anything to share on that. We're going to move into our topic tonight, which is, and we've been on it, but I just kind of wanted to prepare you going back some and just prepare you for, you know, who you need to be in order to even move into love, whether it's love for your certainly love for yourself, love for your spouse or your family, your brother, your siblings, so your children, because, you know, this love thing affects so much in our lives. So in starting, I want to first just give you a definition on love. As a noun, it's an intense feeling of deep affection. And basically it describes it, you know, as someone having, you know, love for their country or something like that. As a verb, it's the feeling of a deep romantic or sexual attachment to someone. Basically, you know, when we say, you know, do you love me? What do we really mean when we ask that question? Or what do we really mean when we tell someone, you know, I love you? And I know it depends on who we're telling, and at the time we're telling them even sometimes. So think about the definitions. Before going into love, I really, because personally I think love has taken on such a negative effect in life that people just see love so differently from what God intended it to be. So before going into it, I want to read something to you. And this is from 1 Corinthians 13, I believe it's 13, 4 through 7. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous. It does not brag, and it is not proud. Love is not rude. It's not selfish and does not get upset with others. Love does not count up wrongs that have been done. Love is not happy with evil, but is happy with the truth. Love patiently accepts all things. It always trusts, always hopes, and always remains strong. That was interesting to me because it's totally, totally different from what we see as love as today. And again, that is 1 Corinthians 13, and that's 4 through 7. And that's the word. It's coming out of, you know, it's part of the word. So I wanted to give you this positive look on love and then have you think about the love as we know it to be today. I mentioned early on that, you know, people that love each other and decide to get married, have kids, many of those people end up hating one another. How can all of this and children and a lifetime together end up in such hatred if love was intended to be and is such a great thing? Moving on, I want to share something with you. I'm going to give you kind of a personal story. I won't give you the name of the person, but I'm going to share something with you before giving you some more definition on love. I met this young lady several months ago and didn't know much about her personal life at the time, but I'm pretty much, for those of you who really, really, really know me, I like trying to discern, or I do end up discerning people or trying to get a feel for people, and just by talking with them, I can kind of feel like where they are or, you know, get some idea. But needless to say, this young lady was in a relationship, and she would talk about this person, and I just wasn't feeling it. I spent quite a number of hours with her on, you know, several occasions, and something was just off about this guy. Well, I had the opportunity to meet them at a function that we went to, and I got a chance to meet both of them, meet him, basically, see them together for the first time. And, again, I felt that even stronger, like something's just not right, you know, something's just not right. And I wanted to say something to her, but, of course, when you don't know people that in that way, I didn't quite know how to say it. So time went on, and she eventually told me that she had broke it off with this particular person, and I shared with her something, you know, just was not right anyway. Moving forward in the story, she starts to tell me about someone from her past that she had, you know, rekindled with, and I had noticed previously that when she would talk about this person, it was different. Things were really different. You could almost feel her energy. You could almost feel the love. You could. It was just such energy there that came from her as she talked about, even when she wasn't trying to talk about him in love. Like, it would just be a normal conversation where his name would come up. You could feel that energy. You could feel that love, and it just wasn't there in that previous relationship. Later on, she revealed to me, I am seeing this person again, and she had been for, you know, a little while. So time moving forward again, from that point forward, it was as if she had such energy, her aroma changed her. She just seemed to be happy. Her life changed. Love changed her life tremendously. She went from this person of just kind of going through life, so to speak, and not that she was, because she's a pretty happy person, but what I'm saying is we need love. We want love. God intended for us to know love, to experience love in the way that I just described it. You know, of course, we may never get to be all of those things in that description, but we should certainly be trying, particularly with the people that we choose to be life partners. So much, I think, once we say I love you, or once we say, you know, we have this person in our life, we think that things drastically change, and they do, and they should. However, if you whatever you're doing before all of this love, it should magnify. You should be doing that and that much more once love comes into it. Now, of course, we're talking about relationship on that instance. Now, you get into family, people just expect you to expect that you love whomever. If you have a sister, people just say, well, you think that you love that person because that's your sister, or you love that person because that's your brother or your mother or your father. However, let's look at words and let's look at actions as you think about love. The moral of that story is, you know, love changes your life. Think about when you're in love and it's reciprocal. When you are in love, you're giving love and you're receiving it from that same person. And this could be in a relationship, whatever. It could be in a family. It could be a brother, sister, or mother, daughter, or father, son. When you love that person and they love you back, when they try just as much as you do to be pleasing to you, and you try to them, you know, there is that aroma. There is such pleasure and such peace and such gratification in your life. It changes your life. And that's what I saw happening to her, so much so I left her one day thinking, gosh, she seems so different. That's because as much love as she's given, she's now getting it back. That's what love is about. We should not spend time on loving people who are not ready for love, who are not capable of loving, because love is something that we should be giving and we should be receiving. So I want to have you think about that as we move forward and talk about, and the lines are open if you all have anything to share on love. And it doesn't have to be about marriage. It doesn't have to be about dating. It could be about any type of love that you have experienced or you're going through or have gone through. Children, spouse, family, friends. I want to share Ralph Waldo Emerson. He puts in his book, love is the highest word and the synonym for God. Okay, it's the highest word and the synonym for God. In the book, The Power of Intention, it says that love encourages, enhances, and supports all of life. That's basically what I just explained about my friend. It encourages. She's so encouraged. I feel like she has so much energy, like she thinks she can do anything in the world. And simply, mainly, I think because she feels like she has a supportive person that believes in her and that will support her and that knows her flaws and that accepts her just as she are. So love encourages, it enhances, and it supports all of life. He goes on to say that love is the prime moving power of the universal spirit of intent. Intent is basically the purpose, you know, your purpose. Dyer goes on to explain and compare love to light. So basically saying love is light. It brings light to any dark situation. He uses the comparison of describing a dark room scenario and lighting the smallest candle, and focuses on the dark room. The light then becomes the candle, or the candle presents the light. And so whatever dark room you're in, the smallest part of any light changes that room. It becomes the light. So we need to look at love as that, look at it that way as well. Okay? Love is the most powerful and still the most unknown energy in the world. That is powerful. Yet we have such a, a negative outlook on love. We have to. You got something?
Well, actually, just with you talking about how love was a light, Psalms chapter 119, verse 105, it says that God's word is a lamp to your feet and a light to your path.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever there's light, light dissipates all darkness, just like she says. The smallest amount of light, I mean, you can have a pitch black room, no matter how large that room is, and it doesn't matter whether it's a match, your cell phone light, a tiny flashlight, it dissipates all darkness. So if one little tiny light can light up a whole entire dark room, that's what God's light does. His word is a lamp to your feet and a light to your path. So if his word, just imagine a pathway. A lot of us have the little lights outside of our pathway, outside of the house, and that light lights the pathway. Sometimes we want God to just light up the whole entire 5-mile radius. Let us just see what's way up, God. We want to just see it all right now. Just show it to me now. But it says his word is a lamp to your feet and a light to your path. So if he's lighting the path little by little, step by step, you have to trust him step by step. You have to walk with him step by step. But no matter what, he's the one that knows the future. He's the one whose way is certain. Otherwise, I really don't know of anyone else that I can trust the way I can place my trust in him, because nobody else knows my future. Nobody else knows what's certain. I certainly don't know what is certain. So I'm going to trust that he will light my path, and the path that he will light up will be a lamp to my feet. I'm going to trust that. Because otherwise, there's nothing else on this earth that I can trust other than what his word tells me.
Right. And this is Tammy again. I asked a question in talking about, or several weeks ago, asked a question to a young person, you know, basically wanted to know from the young point of view, why do you feel that so many people are afraid of love and commitment? And this person said that because they've never seen it, that they don't know what that looks like, because not very many people have that. Even if they attempt to have it, they end up not having it. So, and for those, he went on basically to say as well, you know, for those who want to appear that they have it, it's clear that they don't. They're just going through the motion. So in asking the question, basically he was saying, you know, because they've never seen it, and people really don't believe in what they've not seen. It's very hard for you to trust and believe in love when all around you people are divorcing or separating, or, you know, just living a miserable life together. And that's what our children are seeing. So instantly, of course, I thought about, and I asked the question to him, I said, so what about, you know, we love God, and we say that we love God, and we're committed to doing God's work and his following his word. And he said, no, we're not. You know, we say that, but we don't really, really love God. If well, he went on then to say that we are a society of words and not actions. Now, that was interesting to me, that we are a society of words, basically. We'll speak some things, but when it comes to doing those things and acting out in those things, that we fail in that. In searching for this topic, I came across 1 John 3:17, and I want to read it. Pay close attention to some key words words and actions. Because, again, this person that I asked said that we are a society of words and not actions. 1 John 3:17 reads, if anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? It goes on to say, dear children, let us not love with words, but with actions and in truth. The very same thing that this young person said to me was that we live by words and not by actions. I took that into this whole thing of love, because as I read to you what God's perception of love is, what love is according to the word and what we have turned it into is totally two different things. And again, the more you love someone, the better it should be. If you were doing this, then you should be doing this plus some more. But it seems that once love comes into it, most people think, I don't have to do as much now. When we did the show with Erica Murray, the CEO to the Power of You, she was the author of that book, she explained a scenario of, you know, how we will do more for people on the street than we will do for the people that we love. We will talk better to them. We will act better around them. We will respond differently to them, but we'll come home and we're totally different. So what is love? What is love to you? Have we turned it into something that it is truly not, which has resulted in everything that is happening when there's mention of love? Again, that was 1 John 3:17, where it points out, you know, dear children, let us not love with words, but with actions and in truth. Now, in saying that, and because I mentioned here that it talks about if we see a brother in need and we have no pity on them, for whatever reason, I just know some people will take that out of context and think, you know, they're already gone with it, that my brother should be helping me, my family should be helping me, my friends should be helping me. Then we also need to just keep the word in line, because it also says if man doesn't work, man doesn't eat. Now, there's some differences there when just, because some people get caught up again with doing, giving. I'm okay with that if God is telling you to do and if God is telling you to give. That's something that I had to really, really get in control with in my life, because at one point in time I was a giver, giver, giver. I mean, I would want to stop and pick up the whoever was walking and drop them off and take them here. I wanted to make everybody's life right. I didn't want anybody to feel that pain. As I mentioned, Brandon going through his growing pains, well, he needed to experience those. For his body and his life, he needed to have those growing pains. They were just part of his life in order for him to grow. So sometimes we're out of line. We're trying to do God's work when God is saying this person needs some growing pains. He or she needs to go through this. Now, whether he or she chooses to grow through it is totally different, but we need to be clear of our direction and when we're helping and when we're doing. And in most cases, we help people and it's not really out of love. Or we give people and it's not really out of love. Sometimes it's for self-gratification. It's for self-recognition. Sometimes it's to make you feel better about helping someone else. So it does have to be in order.
I just want to put emphasis on that scripture. What is that? 1 Corinthians 13:4-7. You know, a lot of times we've heard what love is, and we've heard this scripture over and over, but for those of you who really want to know and grasp what God says love is, not what the world says love is, but what God says love is, I really think that some of you should write the scripture down, because we've heard it, and we'll let it go in one ear, not the other, and we'll kind of hear bits and pieces. But if you could take the time, go find that scripture, 1 Corinthians 13:4-7, and it will tell you what love is. I mean, get it in the NIV, get it in the NLT, get it in the King James, get it in the Message Bible, get several versions of it so you can really, 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 truly grasp the concept of what love is, because we don't know what love is, and we don't know how to give it because we don't know what it is. We don't know how to receive it because we don't know what it is, and I know this is grammatically incorrect, but love don't hurt. It don't hurt. The Bible tells you clear, God makes it clear what love is, and not one word in there says, but it will hurt you. So love don't hurt. The world's love hurts. God's love don't hurt.
Yeah. Well, God's love is totally different from the way that we love each other, first of all. And I think so many times it's a twofold kind of question or answer to that, because we hurt. I think what hurts in love is what we do to that person or to ourselves. And that's the part that does, I guess, hurt us. Now, God's love for us, certainly it does not. Certainly I believe that does not. We oftentimes hurt, for sure, and particularly when you're in love, you certainly, there are some things that do hurt. I heard Brandy, I was watching yesterday, and she said, you know, it's such a bad place to be when you're in love with someone that is not willing to love you back. And mm-hmm. and even more detrimental if you feel that person is so deserving, or so to speak. So, and this was at a time in her life where she was, you know, just as famous, and of course she's a beautiful girl, and she just explained that now she's in a divine love, but also she said, if this one does not work, I'm giving up on love. I didn't totally agree with that, because, you know, it could not work. We could be in love with someone today and out of love tomorrow with that person, meaning that, not that you're truly out of love with them, but it's not the best. You realize that it's not the best thing for you. So so in saying that, I didn't agree with her there, that if this one doesn't work, then she would give up on love. But I think maybe because she's in that, still in that pain of where she was hurt so bad once before and things like that. And we all have been there, but I never think we should give up on love. So maybe give up on some people but not love, because there are people out there that want it and are willing to give it and receive it. So quite a difference there. The lines are open, and if you all have anything to share, I know that a lot of you out there think you're in love, or you've been in love, or want to be in love, or have something to share. So Ms. Earlene came in and shared some light on the purpose situation, and we thank her for that. But do come in and share your comments or questions about love. Maybe you're, well, I'll leave that alone. But the lines are open. Tika, you have anything?
Well, yeah, because just a few days ago, me and Tammy was talking about that, you know, the love that we seek from so many other people, that we must love ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. How can we truly love anyone else when we don't love ourselves? We have such a lack of love for ourselves. We haven't forgiven ourselves and things, or we feel that we're so worthy of love from other people that we don't even feel that we're worth loving ourselves. And so, you know, you really have to love who you see when you look in the mirror. You really have to love the human being that God created in the mirror. When you look at you, you have to love you, because God loves you. He it's nothing about you that he doesn't love. It may be some behavior in you that needs to change, but the person that he created, he loves. So when you look in the mirror, you need to love you as well.
Basically, that's where it all stems from, is self-love. And that is missing today in so many people, even in the people that you believe they're walking around and they seem to have it all together. They have the, you know, the house, the car, the family, whatever. But a lot of people are truly missing out on self-love. And if you don't love yourself, I believe that is one of the most important things you can have or have to have in life. It starts with you. If you don't love you, you can't love God wholeheartedly. You can't receive the love from someone else. How can you expect someone else to give you what you don't think you're worth?
Mm-hmm.
But many people are without love for themselves. I wanted to share and I've shared this before, but there was a study that was done by the military, and it was done with a dozen or so people that seemed to be very successful in life. They were happy. They were happily married. They had children who seemed to be pretty much successful and happy children. And they were asked a series of questions. They were asked these questions in a setting to where they were not able to speak about their answers. What was interesting that they all took a very long time in answering these questions, but one main question stood out was, who or what is the most important thing to you? All of them, each one of them put self. That they were the self-love that they had for their self was important. So what they were basically saying is, and it goes back to say, if you're not happy, who's going to be around you? Because you can fake it for a while. It's going to come out. It eventually comes out. Something's going to be said. Something's going to happen to bring up all of that. Now, do we have some off days? Of course we do. In anything, you're going to have some days where, you're just feeling off. That's expected. But we're talking about those people who, again, you put everything, everybody before you, and you end up being resentful to life, to people. You end up just hurting more. So it does start with self-love. If you don't love yourself, you cannot give love, and you certainly cannot receive love. That's a very important question, and it's one of those things where you just assume because, of course, you'll hear people say, I know I love myself. Of course I do. But if you look at their lives, if you look at the untruth in their lives, if you allow a person to talk and if you be around them, if you just listen with that discerning ear, you will kind of sum up where they really are in life with themselves. Self-love is the key, and it starts it all. Can't say enough about it. If you don't love yourself, cannot give love, and you certainly cannot receive it consistently. You can fake it, but it's going to come tumbling down eventually. And maybe, again, that may be why we're ending up with so many divorces, so many separations. As I mentioned last week, I have so many friends lately that are contemplating divorce, and it's hard because you become friends with both of them, and so you feel like you are losing two people because you certainly don't want to pick sides. But so many people are going through that, and again, as we started out, these are people that vowed to love each other for life. They said, oh, this is my best friend. I love her. I love him. They made babies together. They created a life together. And these are the very people that are now hating one another. For the most part, they hate one another consistently, daily. So wouldn't that make people afraid of love? Mm-hmm. It's like the young person said, they're afraid of it because where is it? Where is it working? I'm reminded of a lady that shared that she had been married to the same person for a lifetime, and she said, we never fell out of love at the same time. Well, looking back, I'm sure that they probably did, but someone had to make the grown-up decision and say, okay, I'm not going to go there. I'm going to allow him not to, or her not to love me today or this week and go forward. So someone had to, a lot of things we didn't get to say tonight, but I'll talk some about those next week. The main thing to leave you with is self-love. Are you in love with you? Do you love you? Ask yourself that question. Monitor your life in order to determine, how do you treat yourself? What do you do for you? That will tell you if you really love you. What do you allow people to do to you? Find out what your purpose is. Pray more. Pray with faith, because prayer without faith, you might as well not do it. And just remember these things. Go back and listen to the show. Go back and listen to last week's show. Ran out of time. I do apologize, and I want to pick back up with self-love and then going on into some additional things that I had on love and then going into the part about family. So we'll pick up there. Thank you for you guys that are on listening by online and by way of chat. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of you out there. I see we have Atlanta and Valdosta and Maryland and, of course, Memphis out there. Let's see. I think Washington, Seattle, Washington, I believe. So thank you for listening tonight. Thank you for your support. Can't say enough. If you didn't take anything from tonight's show, pray. Stay on your knees. Stay before God consistently. Again, thank you for your support.